παύω πλέον να σε νοιάζομαι, δεν σε χρειάζομαι. Και απορώ πως η αξία σου είχα. Παύω πλέον να σε σκεφτόμαι, το λέω και ντρεπόμαι. Και όσα κουλήσεις πετάω ρούχα. Μην πιστέψεις ότι πάω να τρελαθώ για σένα. Μην πιστέψεις ότι ήτανε γραφτό. Εσύ με μένα μια ζωή να ζήσουμε μαζί. Και μην πιστέψεις σε σενάρια τρελά ρομαντικά και άλλα τέτοια χαζά, πως κάθε βράδυ μόνος κλαίω. Όλα είναι στο μυαλό. Άκου εμένα που σου λέω. Τυχαία γνωριστήκαμε, τυχαία φιληθήκαμε, τυχαία ερωτευτήκαμε, τυχαία εμείς πεθαίνουμε μωρό μου. Πίστεψε κι αυτό, σε παρακαλώ. Ποτέ δεν σκεφτόμαι τα βράδια μας, ποτέ τις νύχτες δεν μεθάω. Πίστεψε κι αυτό, λιώμα σε κρεμώ. Δεν σε χρειάζομαι, τα μάτια σου δεν βλέπω στο κενό. Πηδάω. Μην πιστέψεις ότι πάω να τρελαθώ για σένα. Μην πιστέψεις ότι ήτανε γραφτό. Εσύ με μένα μια ζωή να ζήσουμε μαζί. Και μην πιστέψεις σε σενάρια τρελά ρομαντικά και άλλα τέτοια χαζά, πως κάθε βράδυ μόνος κλαίω. Όλα είναι στο μυαλό. Άκου εμένα που σου λέω. Τυχαία γνωριστήκαμε, τυχαία φιληθήκαμε.
Somehow make an impact on a race and change the polling. So the main thing is I equate it to baking a cake. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a recipe and you bake a cake and the proportions of the ingredients are in the right proportion, the cake tastes good. It comes out, you put this amount of sugar, this amount of salt, this. But if a pollster takes the recipe and they put too much of this or too much of that in, meaning they poll too many men, too many women, too many old, too many young, mm-hmm. then the cake comes out and it doesn't taste right. Mm-hmm. And that's really what polling is about, is to be this. It's not so much how many people you interview, although that has some impact. But it's what is the proportion? You know, we don't want to miss people who might be likely voters, and that's really the key. Mm-hmm.
Good response. Good response.
Well, you know, I just from the outside looking in, kind of a thing, I would say that David himself has a lot to do with that success.
Yeah, I would say so.
I know, like, you know, he has to talk about Suffolk, but I think, you know, that everybody knows David and the work that he's done and his staff does. So I think it's a kudos to all the way around.
Yeah, and then we even take it deeper. It's his Greek blood, so. It's his Greek blood.
Interview over.
That's where it ends right there, David. Yeah. We wouldn't expect anything less from you, so there you go. we're gonna slap you if you come in second. But nonetheless, listen, David, you know, here we go. It's almost time for, you know, the battle to begin. You know, is it going to be Trump? Is it going to be Biden? Is it going to be neither? Is it going to be one, two? What's going on? And I would have thought I would have heard a little bit more rumble than I have to this point. Or is the game, are the games about to begin?
So it's crazy. So Biden and Trump are so far ahead in the polling that neither wants to engage with their opponents. Biden says he's not debating Robert F. Kennedy and Marianne Williamson, and Trump is basically skipping the debates with the Republican candidates because he's so far ahead. Mm-hmm. And ironically, they both need each other. Biden's best chance to win re-election is against Trump, and vice versa. Trump's best chance, they don't want to run against someone younger and someone who doesn't have baggage. Right now, both Trump and Biden have baggage of different kinds. And so there's this weird dance that's happening where both of these candidates actually need each other on the ballot because that's their best shot. So many people say in polling they don't want either candidate, Trump or Biden, and they also say that they think they're old or that they just can't, they're not up to doing the job. So if a younger, cleaner Democrat or a younger, cleaner Republican were to emerge, that would be bad news for either Biden or Trump.
Yeah. David, how do you emerge? What has history taught us about an emerging candidate?
You need to do well in one of the early contests. So right now, the question really is who comes in second and third in Iowa and in New Hampshire, assuming that Trump continues his lead. And I don't see any, I mean, throw more indictments at him, throw more charges, charge him with this, charge him with that. That hasn't moved the numbers in the Republican primary. So the question now becomes, well, who emerges? Is DeSantis the agreed upon major candidate, and will all of the others drop out after Iowa and New Hampshire, or is it Nikki Haley? Vivek Ramaswamy, who's a Republican, who's polling in that second tier now, he's moved up, he's not going to get out. You know, he's a self-funded millionaire.
I've seen him speak. What did he do to gain his fame?
He was a high-tech guy. You know, he was a venture capital guy, and he made a ton of money at a young age. And he has a lot of wealth, and that's enabled him to meet all of the requirements. He's funded a good advertising campaign at the grassroots among Republicans so that he can get unique donors and that his poll numbers are up. And so it's ruffled the feathers of a lot of the older Republican candidates like Mike Pence and Chris Christie, and, you know, who are like, who is this young kid who's trying to, you know, move in the Republican primary? But they're not understanding that people want young. People want someone who's competent and young, and that's why they all teamed up on Ramaswamy in the last debate and said, okay, yeah, you're young, but you don't know what you're talking about. You're not qualified yet. You're not ready for prime time. And that's kind of, and so since that debate, Ramaswamy's numbers have kind of tapered off, and he's still polling in the single digits, mid-high single digits.
I thought, you know, and I've felt that once, you know, Trump begins to deflate, then Biden, you know, also deflates. You know, I agree with your assessment to begin with. But I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, my sense was, and you have a much better sense of this, that as we move into the fall, into, like, you know, before January 15th, there will be some kind of a, you know, emerging candidate from the Republicans that will take that chance and be identified as that one that challenges Trump more openly than they have. And it just seems to be, like, fairly quiet on that front right now. It's just...
Yeah, so, at first it was DeSantis, and when DeSantis got in the race, he was polling in the mid-high 20s. We had him in the 30s at one point, I think, in one of our polls, but he's just been a straight line down. DeSantis is now only polling at like 15, 16%. Then after the first debate a few weeks ago, the Republican debate, was Nikki Haley. She was seen as the more electable candidate, but you know, again, the math just doesn't work at this point when the leading candidate is polling over 50. Because even if there's one other candidate, you know, sure, it gets closer. But a lot of Ramaswamy's voters would vote for Trump on a second choice kind of thing. So, you know, I mean, if Trump was only at 25% and everybody else was at 8%, or 9%,
yeah,
I'd say sure. You know, if somebody gets to 10 or 12, and everybody else drops out, then you've got a chance to overtake him. But he starts at 50. So, you know, you would need a perfect fall, a dominoes effect of everybody getting out at the same time, which is what happened in the Democratic primary last election.
Yeah.
As you recall, we had so many you know, Democrats who are running, Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren and Biden and so many others. And after South Carolina, Teddy, everybody got out pretty much right away.
Yeah, quickly, actually.
Yeah, it was in March, right before Super Tuesday.
Yeah, before the Super Tuesday.
And they all surrounded Biden as the person who could beat Trump, and he did.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was the what the Republicans were going for. It's almost like the preseason to the primaries right now, what the Republicans are going through, like to identify which Republican really will be the one that takes on Trump. But even like Ramaswamy, he's the one that sort of like says, you know, Trump is the best president we've had in the 21st century. So it's very it's very difficult to distinguish him, even like, you know, within that framing. Like, he doesn't come in as the outsider completely and say, hey, you know, I'm going to go and bring it forward. I mean, his best chance is, if Trump gets tired, to say, give him the gauntlet to move the party forward.
Do you foresee any possibility of an endorsement from either candidate?
What do you mean?
From either, you know, Trump or Biden.
Somebody else,
and just say, listen, you know, I'm out, and I endorse, you know, this guy.
I definitely don't see it on Trump's end.
Yeah. Mm.
Biden, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, we released a poll a week ago of just adults, 1,000 adults across the country. It wasn't even on politics, Ted. It was just on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, look, I majored in economics when I went to school, and there's a lot smarter people out there in terms of the economy than me. But I'm not seeing a soft landing like everybody's predicting. Maybe on Wall Street there will be, but not on Main Street. I mean, we just had a poll that showed that every single spending category that we gave to respondents, people were cutting back on if they were making less than $50,000 a household a year. Every single category: food, groceries, electricity, going out to eat less, you name it, clothes, everything.
Health, education.
Everything.
It's awful. It's awful. And I said in my column, I basically articulated that, you know, it's great to have government statistics, you know, showing positive results right now from Bidenomics, but we're polling real time. We were polling people last week, which isn't going to show up in the government statistics for another 3 months. And, you know, what we're seeing is, it's coming to a screeching halt.
David, the person that, you know, the size and shape of the people that were polled recently, were they all in that category? In other words, you know...
No, it was all income groups. So, you know, if you looked at the over 100,000 income household, they were only cutting back really on two of the seven categories, but it was 7 out of 7 among people who were earning less than $50,000. So again, you know, you've got a scenario of binary-nomics, mm-hmm. where the haves and the have-nots are going in different directions. I mean, and one of the other findings in the survey, which is not quite related to politics or even the economy, is that households of less than $50,000 income have a higher probability of identifying their household as having an addiction problem.
Wow.
An addiction problem like gambling, alcohol,
opiates,
drugs, whatever, online gaming. And that poses an additional pressure on those low-income households, because they've got family members who are dealing with an addiction problem, and they're trying to put bread on their table, and they're cutting back their spending. So I'm seeing a very different picture right now in the polling than what the economists are telling people.
But isn't that like, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as what's wrong with our politics in general, right? There seems to be like a detachment when the political conversation that's going on, and where society is, where their pocketbook is, and what people are feeling. And it's sort of like that's not registering with the sort of like the political discourse right now.
No, everything is filtered through, you know, who is that person talking? Are they for the left or for the right? And then the people adjust for the filter.
Yeah.
If they want to hear the economic statistics that are good for Biden, they tune everything else out and they just listen to that. If they want to hear that, you know, Trump is great and the Republicans are great, and then it's the same thing. You know, they'll find their media. And it's really dangerous because, you know, which is why I love polling, because we actually talk to real people, real time. We get their input. A lot of the questions we ask, we never even give them categories. We let them, you know, as Petro knows, they're open-ended questions. So whatever they say, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, Teddy, you're doing an interview. Whatever they say, they say.
Mm-hmm.
So if they, and then we create the categories after they say what they say. We don't lead them. And what they're saying is that, you know, there a lot of people are hurting out there. And so that's kind of the tee up for some of your questions, you know, coming forward. I mean, Petro's right. The textbook says that somebody will emerge as the alternative to Trump. The question is who. They've all kind of had their run. The only person that really hasn't had their run yet is Scott, Tim Scott. Watch out for him because he does poll pretty well in both New Hampshire and Iowa. Some poll better in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Other people like Christie polls better in New Hampshire than he does in Iowa. Scott's pretty consistent on both ends, and he hasn't really made a run yet. I don't think people – he's got a great personal story.
Yeah.
And I don't think people have really looked at him. And, you know, he's the kind of person that, you know, here we are talking in September, but, you know, he could be a factor. You know, he could emerge.
Could present problems for the Democrats, too.
He could.
Yeah.
He could. You know, African-American, kind of a rags-to-riches story.
Yeah.
But he believes in, you know, more conservative values and so on, and Democrats are having some problems with African-American men right now in terms of, you know, they've got to win African-American men by wide margins for Biden to win re-election.
Mm-hmm.
Many people say that's a problem. Some people say it's a blip right now, but they'll return to Biden. Nobody knows.
Conservative values, they have a audience in Latino voters, too. So I think that, you know, that cuts across the board.
It's just going to be so
interesting. It's absolutely true. It's true. You know, Latino voters are underrated, and they're the biggest growing subpopulation. If you look at Hispanics or people who say two or more races, many Hispanic people show up in those categories, and that's the largest growing demographic right now, not represented in either party ticket unless Trump picks, you know, an Hispanic VP if he's the nominee.
David, I want to sidetrack a little bit to something you mentioned a little bit earlier in regards to the addictions. And one of the things you talked about was gambling. I want to get your input. And has anything been pulled? You know, you watch, I think we're all sports fans. We're all Greeks. We love sports. We watch sports fans every game. And we're watching these commercials, which are completely, you know, out there trying to grab at somebody to place an instant bet. Particularly the younger generation. There's a lot of young people I know that are, actively, you know, on their app or placing, you know, they may be small wages, but it's on a daily basis, you know. I'm also going to say I don't want to be hypocritical, but I do buy, you know, a lottery ticket every couple of days. You know, is there any defense to this?
But you wouldn't say you have a gambling addiction.
Correct.
Okay. So, yeah, this is a great question. And what you're saying, and so it's the repetition that really is the downfall. First of all, gambling is a regressive tax. So I was just talking about the polling, talking about less than 50,000 households. If they're short of money, they're not going to be able to get an executive level job. They're not going to be able to get a second job that's going to potentially, you know, create savings for them. So what are they going to do? They're going to get on their app and they're going to bet on the next week's game, or whatever. You know, it used to be fantasy, whatever, right? They started with fantasy football, and you'd put your own teams together and stuff like that. And it was very, harmless. Now it's about the repetition. So when you see those ads, those DraftKings ads or those the FanDuel ads, you know, it's all about getting you to start betting. And what happens is because low-income families don't have a lot of disposable income and very little savings for, you know, security for an emergency, they are more susceptible. And so they end up paying the freight. And they, sure, it goes into the coffers of the state, but who's paying for it? Poor people who don't have an out. And, you know, I would be very surprised to see we did not poll this, because I didn't expect the numbers to turn out. You know, it's one of those things. You put a question on a poll, you don't expect it to break the way it breaks. Now I have five questions I want to ask after having that poll. Like, have you cut back spending on gambling or on alcohol or on cocaine or whatever their addiction is? Mm-hmm. And if they say no to that, then we get a real problem.
Then we'll do,
because they're cutting back on everything else.
And chances are that they have not. You know, I mean, that's the stone cold truth.
Yeah, well, that's usually the case, isn't it? I mean, like, that's usually the case. Even like in other societies, in developing societies, you know, men use the money for alcohol and tobacco and not for other things. So I would imagine it's similar trends.
It's very similar trends, and now it's even spread and it's accelerated to online gaming, because in online gaming they offer, you know, you get a certain amount of points or whatever, you know, they're convertible to some other either. You know, digital currency or whatever, and you know, and so it's a very dangerous place to go, because you get people who are playing video games or whatever who are depressed, either because they don't have a job or they're not making enough money or they're cutting into their savings or whatever to pay bills, and it's this self-perpetuating problem. It's this problem where they're escaping their depression by putting their heads into these games or just watching a game or going to the package store a little bit more often than they do and escaping their problems. But they're also, you know, it's you know, collapsing the people who are lower income people. So it was a very powerful poll, and it people can check out the column. It's on the website. I, at the end of the column, I recommended a couple of things. And one of the things I recommended was there should be a fiscal stimulus immediately to people who are low income. But then Republicans would say it's inflationary, so they won't do it because they're hell-bent on impeaching Biden. So forget fiscal stimulus at this point, as Petro says, because it's going to get filtered through politics. And then the other thing at the end of the column I mentioned was, do not raise rates anymore for the Fed. Not, you know, the Fed starts their deliberations this week about what to do. General consensus is they're just going to leave rates the same. At the end of the column I say, we've got to start talking about rate cuts now, Teddy. Mm-hmm. Rate cuts. Mm-hmm. No more raise rates. The economy is already slowing down. We know that. And, you know, we've got to think about, you know, those economists have to think about, you know, putting it back on the table at some point. Not right now, but maybe at some point to start cutting those rates and getting the rates down. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know who reads the column. Hopefully somebody will.
Well, you know, I think before we, you know, we let you go, you got to tell us where we find this poll. It sounds very interesting. And I think,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah. Well, how can we reference
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so like you said, it's on
yeah,
the website.
Yeah, so you can do a just a Google search on SUPRC, or you could go to suffolk.edu/SUPRC, or if you just want to Google Paleologus column, you'll see on Google, it'll come up. I've written a couple columns the last few weeks. And, you know, check it out. Check out the data. We did one poll, as I say, of people who were just adults in the country. That was released last week. And then 2 weeks ago, we released a poll of unlikely voters. Not likely voters, Teddy. Just people who say they're not going to vote next year. And that includes unregistered voters and people who are registered but saying they're still not going to vote even though they're registered. And that showed that there's a lot of Trump voters out there who are just disgusted with politics. Yeah. And they're saying to us they're not going to vote next year because they think the whole thing is great.
I consider that, and I'm sorry if I'm being heavy, and I'm sure they have their reasons, but that's unconstitutional. That, you know, You gotta vote. You know, even if it's...
Well, if they, I'll tell you, the poll shows if they vote, Trump wins. So the Biden approach is, hey, stupid people, don't vote. Complain about the system being rigged, because we found that Trump was winning considerably among the people who are unlikely voters. So, you know, it's ironic. Trump's been going around saying, it's a rigged system for 5 years. Now people actually believe it's a rigged system, and they're so turned off by what Petro's saying, the polarization, they're saying, forget it. I'm not going to vote. My vote doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's now hurting Trump. The fact that those people believe the system is rigged is now coming back to bite them, because they're telling us they're sick of everything. They're not going to vote. If they did vote, Trump probably would do better than he's doing in the likely voter polls.
And it's a phenomenon across the board. So, like, you know, if you followed Greek politics in the last month, there's internal elections in Syriza, and this guy just came in out of nowhere,
right?
A Greek American has translated every slogan that you've heard in the last year in American politics, whether it's from Trump or Biden. Let's take our country back. I want to drain the swamp. All kinds of things like that. And he's going to be the leader of the Syriza party, the left of center party in Greece, with no platform, with no identifiable people. 147,000 people came out and voted for him this past Sunday in the very first type of a primary process that Greece is undertaking. He's not saying anything substantial. He's saying something completely new. Just came in last month, the last day of like registering to be a candidate. Complete translation from English.
How was he able to get his message out?
Social media? Social media. Just like, you know, he's like, hi, I'm Emo Stefanos, and, you know, θα πάρουμε τη χώρα μας πίσω. Take our country. Like, it's the same kind of a message. It's not, and there's nothing beyond it. I think people are at a point, with, as David describes, that are so fed up, that are looking for a new message, a new face, and they're saying, you know what, let's give it a try.
Yeah.
And the internal workings of cities were problematic. They weren't able to deliver, they weren't organized, and when you have that kind of disruption within your own party, someone like that can emerge very quickly and basically say, what we had didn't work, let's give this person a shot. And, you know, that's just an amazing trajectory, what happened.
But I think it's probably something we'll see more often than not.
We're going to run up to an automatic station ID. Let me get that in, and then we'll have some closing comments with Dave Paleologos, who joins us this morning. You are tuned to Grecian Echoes. All right, we are back. David, anything in closing this morning? Anything, any new polls? We're probably going to be reaching out to you more and more as we come closer. Are you planning to go to New Hampshire? We got to start thinking about that. Maybe we'll team up. I'll make a call to Lou and Taki as well and see if it's worth exploring this year. I think it might be. Petro says he'd be willing to go down there as well this year. So maybe we can make a Greek contingency like we have the past several years.
I'm not sure. You know, we're gonna see how the race shakes out. I mean, there won't be really a Democratic primary that's going to mean anything. It'll just be on the GOP side. I will tell you that we are planning to do two statewide New Hampshire polls. It's kind of a unique partnership. Both the Boston Globe and USA Today want to use Suffolk for their polling in New Hampshire. So we're going to have the benefit of both regional powerhouse and USA Today as well, with all of the properties nationally. So we're going to do two statewide polls between now and probably early January. And then we're going to be doing daily tracking right after Iowa. We still don't know for sure when the New Hampshire primary is going to be. We think it's the 23rd, but that's all up in the air still.
David, as always, your contribution is well appreciated, and you bring a lot to us.
Great conversation with you and Petro.
Same here.
That's why I brought the professor along to kind of, help
the
us
professor
along.
And myself.
the professor has the world view. He's got the world view. Piece, which is so relevant to what's going on today.
That's true.
Nice talking to you, David.
Nice talking to you, David. We appreciate it.
Stuff.
We'll regroup soon. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. David Palaiologos.